A row of white stars form into an archway over the peak of a steep mountain, the logo for Paramount. British Sky Broadcasting presents The Browning Version, starring Albert Finney as Andrew Crocker-Harris, Greta Scacchi as Laura Crocker-Harris, Matthew Modine as Frank Hunter, Julian Sands as Tom Gilbert, Michael Gambon as Dr. Frobisher, and Ben Silverstone as Taplow. The screenplay is by Ronald Harwood, based on the play by Terence Rattigan. It's directed by Mike Figgis, voiced by Stephen O'Neill on behalf of MCS Agency. A schoolmaster in his 60s, dressed in a sober grey suit and tie and long black school robes, is pacing very slowly amongst the ancient buildings of a public school. The man has short greying hair in a side parting. His expression is rather dour and stern. A green-coloured London taxicab is heading along a narrow road bordered by trees on one side and green fields on the other. In the distance, at the edge of woodland, is a grand 18th-century school building in light grey stone. There's a chapel in the Gothic style alongside it. A blonde man in a light brown suit and black schoolmaster's robes is hurtling along a country lane on a bicycle. He crouches over the handlebars and pedals as fast as he can. The taxi comes round a bend and approaches the school building. Then a smartly dressed slim man in a brown suit with blonde hair swept back heads through an archway carrying luggage. He looks around with trepidation, and a dark-haired bespectacled man in a black suit and tie appears out of a side door and points at him.
Mr. Gilbert.
Yes, good morning.
We thought you might have caught the earlier train, sir.
Yes, well, I did, but it was late, and getting a taxi wasn't easy.
Allow me.
The schoolmaster on the bike is nearing the school. The school porter says...
The historic hall, built 1550. Destroyed by fire, rebuilt 1732, restored 1874.
It's very beautiful.
The biking schoolmaster rides through the archway and dismounts. The porter leads Gilbert through an old wooden door. A boy of 14 barges between the visitor and the porter.
Late.
Cromwell's. Right today or tomorrow. Any boy late for morning prayers is given Cromwell's, which is the word here for punishment. If you ask me why it's called Cromwell's, I'll say why is a crooked letter and you can't make it straight.
Quite.
Don't worry, sir. You'll soon get the hang of us. Mr. Gilbert, new master for next term. Show him in, please.
The cycling teacher rushes on foot through the wooden door and past the porter.
Trouble with the alarm clock again, sir.
A portly balding man in glasses, a bow tie, suit and school gown stands at a lectern in the old chapel.
Morning, boys.
Morning, sir.
Announcements. The inter-house boat race was won by Ironsides. And we have to thank for the excellent organisation Mr. Hunter. Tomorrow, 2 p.m. cricket match, staff and old boys versus school first 11. And tomorrow evening at 8:30 p.m., concert by small choir from the library steps. Now, prize giving on Friday will be at the earlier time of 9 a.m. This is to enable Mr. Fletcher to reach London in order to join the MCC squad in preparation for their match against the Australians at Lord's.
A dark-haired young man in a suit and tie gets up slightly from his seat and acknowledges the applause with a nod of his head.
No need to get overexcited. There'll be tears before bedtime. Right. Now, as you know, Mr. Fletcher is giving up teaching to become a professional cricketer. Now, I'm sure you want to wish him well for the future at prize-giving. Now, you will also want to show your appreciation to Mr. Crocker-Harris on Friday. Mr. Crocker-Harris is resigning because of ill health. He's been with us for 18 years. He's taking up less arduous duties at another school, and I'm sure we're all very, very sorry to lose him. And, of course, we'll be sorry to lose his wife also. She's been with us for 15 of those 18 years, and she's endeared herself to us all so much. Now, hymn number 555, Lead Us, Heavenly Father, Lead Us.
The teacher, who is late, creeps into the chapel. Then the schoolboys are milling around the quadrangle at the chapel entrance, Fletcher's being mobbed by a group of boys for his autograph.
Who do you think's the best left-arm bowler in the country?
Yours!
Oh, no,
really, come on, don't be ridiculous. Come on, come on, make way for Mr. Harris. What? I'll do it on the back. Where would you like it?
Go on, sir. It's the end of term, sir.
Oh, yes, sir. Please, sir.
Honest. I never promised. I never make promises to juvenile delinquents.
You do, sir.
You just want to see me blow myself up, don't you, you little monster?
Please, sir.
No.
Excuse me, Frank. Good morning. I still need the details of your classes for next term.
Oh, right. Sorry, Andrew. Could I get them to you today?
I'd be obliged. Just the final piece of the jigsaw, as it were. Would 12 o'clock at my house be convenient?
All right, listen. One more experiment. But if you let anybody know, I'll have your heads. You understand?
All right. You're like policemen.
Sorry?
Get younger and younger. Laura Crocker Harris.
Tom Gilbert, I'm taking over from your husband.
I know. You're going to be head of the new language department. Andrew, my husband, was only head of classical languages.
Could you do me a favor?
Of course.
Could you point out to me Mr. Frank Hunter?
I'll do better than that. Follow me. Laura? Diana? Are we still going into town? Darling, I'll be right back.
Ah, Laura. You're going to miss your regular attendance and morning prayers.
Well, thank you, Headmaster. I shall miss it too. It's a nice way to start the day.
And the library won't be the same without you. Well, well. Tell me, how is Andrew taking all this? Well, I hope?
Yes, thank you, Headmaster. He's, bearing up.
That's sad. Very sad.
Hey, Taplow, did you get your switch to science?
I don't know. I'm just going to ask.
You work in the library?
Just 2 days a week.
No, I have to see parents. I'd like you to supervise the sound system.
All right.
We need about 20 tannoys and... Good morning, Laura.
Hello, Laura.
Excuse me for interrupting. This is Keith Rafferty, head of sciences. Frightfully important. And Frank Hunter. Tom Gilbert. Andrew's successor.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. The headmaster asked me to show you to your room.
You don't mind?
No, not at all. I hear you did a bit of rowing up at Oxford.
Oh, God, another sportsman. So the head loves them on the staff. I'm waiting to see who wins Wimbledon. You'll need someone to take over from Frank in chemistry when he goes back to the colonies.
Well, we must keep our bodies in shape, mustn't we?
Sir? Oh, I was wondering if I could have a word with you.
Certainly not. The bell's gone. It's too late.
That's right. Cut along.
Sir?
You cut along.
Frank, we don't say cut along anymore.
Oh, we don't? What do we say?
We say fuck off.
And remember, don't bully the big boys. Pick on the little ones. It's safer.
Good luck.
Thank you. I should say hello to Mr. Crocker Harris.
Oh. Listen, you can talk to him later. I mean, we don't want to keep the headmaster waiting.
Okay.
Come on, I'll show you where you're sleeping.
Sir? Do I disturb you, sir?
Perhaps.
I know the rules, sir. But it's very important to me. Have I got my switch to upper fifth science, sir?
You have obtained exactly what you deserve, no less and certainly no more. And Taplow, I shall expect you at the house for extra work at 12:15 precisely. What is it?
I'd fix to play golf, sir.
Well, then you must unfix it, mustn't you? You missed an hour last week. You can't expect me to take money from your father under false pretenses.
He won't mind, sir.
I'm not sure I should take your word for that, Tepler.
No, sir.
The point is that we mind, don't we?
Yes, sir. We mind.
12:15, extra work.
And you're on exchange, I take it?
Yep. Just finished my first year. I'm here for 3.
You like it?
Yeah. It's a great place to teach. You just feel the history, the tradition. They put me up here when I first came for my interview. I didn't sleep a wink. The beds also date back to 1667, I think.
I'll be fine. It's only 2 nights.
Gilbert puts his suit carrier on the antique bed.
Are you married?
Yes.
Kids?
Yes, 2. We'll all be here next term.
You found a place to stay?
Yes, we're taking the Crocker Harris house.
Oh.
Yes, most of our classrooms are in this building. Go on. Up here is the upper fifth science, where Mr. Hunter manufactures foul-smelling concoctions for his own perverted branch of learning.
Well, not as perverted as the classics. Won't Mr. Gilbert be teaching the boys about rape and murder and incest?
Unworthy, Mr. Hunter. If you knew more about the classics, you scientists, you might be less keen to destroy this little planet of ours. Wasn't it Einstein who said,
we don't understand science properly.
No, I believe he said we don't know how to use it sensibly. Have a nice day, Mr. Gilbert.
He opens the door. The boys are pulling silly faces behind it.
If only he had a little more discipline. Of course, he's an American, you know.
She's coming.
Ah, boys. Mr. Crocker here is not here yet.
Nice servant. 6 minutes to go yet, sir.
Ah, 6 minutes. Yeah. Hello, Watson. How's your father?
It's quite well, thank you, sir. But my name's Wilson, sir.
Wilson, is it really? But your father's all right just the same, is he?
Yes, thank you, sir. He's quite dried out now.
Well, well. Now, boys, this is Mr. Gilbert. He's going to be the head of our new languages department. I trust those of you who remain in this class next term will be as well behaved with Mr. Gilbert as I'm sure you were with Mr. Crocker Harris.
Good morning, boys.
It might interest you to sit in on this period, Mr.
Gilbert.
Gilbert, yes, Mr. Gilbert, and observe your future pupils in action. Yes, if I see him, I'll warn him.
Thank you, sir.
Pay attention to Mr. Gilbert, boys. He doesn't take over his official duties until next term, but he can still report your misdoings to me today.
The headmaster leaves Gilbert looking awkward. Taplow, a thin young boy with long brown hair and a centre parting, creeps up to the door of Hunter's classroom.
I put 150 milliliters of hydrogen peroxide solution in this water bottle. Biggles had a nosebleed this morning and was kind enough to donate this blood. So we just mix this with the hydrogen peroxide solution. Biggles, what have we got in this jar here?
Iron sulfate.
That's right. Nick, could you tell me the chemical formula for iron sulfate?
FeSO4, sir.
That's very good. Well, now, hang on. No, this has never happened before. Boys, I think you ought to just backlog now.
The contents of the drinks bottle shoots into the air in a jet of steam.
What do you got in your blood, Vic? Okay, boys, what do you want to do next? You there. What do you want?
Piss off, Taplow.
All right, knock it off. You tried to see me this morning.
Yes, sir.
Well, why are you following me around? You with the CIA? KGB? MI5?
No, sir, the law fits, sir.
Same thing. What's your name, boy?
Taplow, sir. I'll be in your class next term if I get my switch.
This isn't next term. This is this term. Vamoose. Get out of here. Taplow! What's the chemical formula for ethanol?
C2H5OH, sir.
Rouse! Get out of here!
He enters Gilbert's classroom.
Wait, Taplow! You'll know. What's up with the croc? Why's he being forced to retire?
There's nothing wrong with him. The head just wanted to give him the chop, that's all.
I know exactly what it is. One night, first time for about 10 years, he had it away with his wife and gave him a heart attack.
Too, I should think. No, it's not his heart. If there's anything wrong with him, it's probably piles.
Of course it's piles. Always gets him in the end.
All right, Bulla. It's not piles, it's his heart.
It can't be his heart. He hasn't got one.
Right. It is a sadist.
Now cut it out, boys. I'm not really interested.
It is his heart, sir. I have extra lessons with him.
Sadists don't have hearts anyway.
Are you going to be running special projects?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, the fact is, we both want to start a magazine, and you allocate the funds, sir.
Well, Mr. Crocker Harris is still in charge, isn't he? So he should settle this.
Well, so you see, Mr. Crocker Harris always says no to anything new.
I don't think he does hate people. I don't think he likes people either. And he doesn't care whether people like him.
Then I'd say he hasn't a care in the world. You've obtained exactly what you deserve, no less, and certainly no more.
I think if he gave us a chance, no less, and certainly no more, I think we'd quite like him.
Now, I won't tell you again.
The fact is, I feel sorry for him.
Sorry for old Hitler.
You little arse-crawler, Taplow.
Stop, stop it now.
Harris enters the room. The warring children immediately lurch to their desks and stand bolt upright. Harris remains by the door with a frown. He looks at Gilbert, who nods at him weakly.
Good morning, sir. I'm Gilbert.
Good morning.
Gilbert steps back. With the same attentive frown, Harris moves very slowly up to the teacher's desk at the front of the class, keeping an eye out for any further misbehaviour. An old clock with a wooden face shows it's 10 o'clock. Harris sits on a large, very old, dark wood chair. He nods. The boys sit.
Wilson?
Sir?
Apparently you were late for chapel.
Just a few seconds. I was in the library and you can't hear the bell.
No doubt you will recount those excuses to your housemaster. I fear I'm not interested in them.
Sir.
These are your Latin verses. Only one boy's efforts, Buller's, had any merit, and that somewhat doubtful. The rest were mainly abominable.
Buller comes to the front desk and picks up the pile of exercise books.
It seems to me that the best way of employing the first part of this period would be for all of you to attempt the verse again. And if you should find the disturbance from the upper fifth science too distracting, you may console yourselves, as good classicists, with the thought that, to amend an aphorism, scientia escalere scientiam.
The class of boys all look rather blank. Taplow, sitting at the back, gives a confused little chuckle. Taplow's face drops as his classmates look round at him. He stands up.
Yes, sir.
You laughed at my little epigram.
Yes, sir.
I'm flattered at the obvious advance your Latin has made that you should so readily understand what the rest of the class did not.
Harris gestures at him to come to the front of the class. With a certain trepidation, his head bowed, Taplow makes his way slowly up to the teacher's desk.
Perhaps you would be good enough to explain it to them so that they can share your pleasure.
Taplow's frozen to the spot.
Come along, Taplow. Don't be so selfish as to keep a good joke to yourself. Tell the others.
I didn't hear it properly, sir.
You didn't hear it? Indeed. Then why, may I ask, did you laugh? Why did you laugh at what you did not hear?
Politeness, sir.
I beg your pardon.
Politeness, sir.
Toujours la politesse. I'm touched, Taplow. But if you really wish to show me politeness, you'll do so now by translating verses less appalling than the ones I corrected this morning. Sit.
Looking a little shamefaced, the boy heads back to his seat. The class begin their work. Harris takes his spectacles out of their case on the desk and steps off the plinth at the front of the room. He moves slowly around the desks with his hands behind his back. One of the boys looks round at Taplow.
Still feel sorry for him.
The clock shows that it's 10:40. Harris peers down at a watch that's on his desk.
Finish now. As this is the last time we shall meet as a class, it may not be amiss for me to say goodbye and wish you all the best of good fortune. And now the end of term treat. We will read a scene from the Agamemnon by Aeschylus. Agamemnon is perhaps the greatest play ever written. The scene I have selected starts with Clytemnestra standing over the bodies of Agamemnon, her husband, and the prophetess Cassandra, both of whom she's just murdered. Very well, Lawton, begin.
Porsunon phenois docusin enai, permones arcustet an phoxean hupsos creson enthesun chrono germen. Hesteka.
Hesteka. Hesteka.
Hesteka. De nth epis ep ex ergasmenois.
Forgive me for interrupting, but I have the impression you understand nothing of what you're reading.
No, sir.
Clytemnestra has just committed murder. She is describing her foul deed. She's unrepentant, hmm? Do you not think she would show some emotion?
Of course, sir. I was just...
I realize, Lawton, that you may not have met a wife who has destroyed her husband, nor perhaps had Aeschylus. Nevertheless, he knew a lass that such wives do exist. He used his imagination, Lawton. Imagination, a word I think not in your vocabulary. For example, hestakede enthe apaisa epexea gazmenois. I stand upon mine act, yea, where I struck. Do you not think, in saying those words, she might reveal a flash of cruelty and of pride? Defiant creature. And then, here, hutodi eproxa, kai taduk anes samai, hos meti fugain, meti amunestai moron. And I confess it. I did use such craft he could not fly nor fend him against death. Aperon amphli blastrom hosper ichthuon peristi hidso. I caught him in a net, as men catch fish. Pluton hematos cacon, no room, no rat hole in his loopless robe. Pio dimin dis, I struck him twice. And once and twice he groaned. He doubled up his limb. Kai peptokoti tritain ependi diomi tu katakthonos dios necron soteros euktoian karin. And with that stroke, committed him to Zeus that keeps the dead. Huton ton hautu thumon homine peso. Cacfusion oxean hymatos fagain, palemi aremne sacadi foinia stros.
Harris has risen to his feet with his eyes closed, consumed by the poetry. Some of his class appear surprised. Harris looks around as if brought to his senses by the bell. He puts his glasses back on and peers at the text he's holding. He sits, then carefully closes the book and takes his glasses off.
Very well, you may leave.
He stares down at the table. The boys get up and put their books into their desks. The young boys head down some steps and behind a choir rehearsing outside. They bash the choristers in the backs of their legs as they rush past them. A long-haired prefect shouts, The prefect thwacks Taplow on the back of the head with a rolled-up newspaper.
Got to get him.
Oh, I don't know, we'll get in trouble.
Oh, come on, Taplow. The troops always pick on you. Look, we'll do it tomorrow.
Come on, it'll be a laugh. It's the last day of term. What can they do?
In the classroom, Harris is still at his desk, staring forwards thoughtfully. Gilbert stands up and adjusts his jacket. He moves to the desk.
Thank you,
sir. He turns towards the door.
I realize, of course, you will not be putting so much emphasis on the study of Greek and Latin. Perhaps they may be even dropped from the curriculum or made optional extras.
My remit from the headmaster is to organize a new language department, sir. That really means modern languages. I believe we need a greater concentration on German, French, Spanish. It is, after all, a multicultural society.
Ah, yes. The modern approach. Not so many years ago, the great passion was to learn Russian. Then came Perestroika. Russian wasn't trendy anymore.
Yes, well, thank you for allowing me to observe.
Not at all. Perhaps we shall see each other later.
Gilbert nods and leaves the room. Harris remains in his seat. He carefully places his glasses down on the corner of the desk. He looks towards the window, then gets up, and stepping off the plinth, he moves slowly across the room. He stops at the window and looks out of it. The schoolboys are crossing the cobblestoned quadrangle below, hurrying to their lessons. Carrying some books, Mr. Hunter, in a light brown suit and black robes, walks across the front lawn up to the Harris's pretty thatched cottage, inside which are wooden beams and a rustic decor. Hunter appears in the doorway.
Hello, anybody home?
Just me, sir.
Taplow, you are following me around.
No, sir, I've got extra work with Mr. Crocker Harris.
Uh-huh.
But he's not here yet.
And Mrs. Crocker Harris?
No, she's not here either.
What are you studying?
Aeschylus, sir. The Agamemnon. Have you ever read it?
Well, no, I can't say that I have. Is it any good?
Well, as a matter of fact, it is, really.
Well, what's it about?
It's about a wife who's unfaithful and murders her husband.
I get it, a comedy. Say, listen, did you get a chance to talk to Mr. Crocker Harris about your transfer to my science class?
Yes.
And? What did he say?
What he always says to everything.
Oh, come on, what is it?
Taplow fidgets nervously, then puts his hand through his hair.
You have obtained exactly what you deserve. No less, and certainly no more.
Andrew? Andrew, is that you? Oh, what a pleasant surprise.
Hi, Laura.
Didn't expect to see you here. Hello, Taplow.
Oh, Andrew asked me to come by. It's about my timetable for next term.
Oh, and he's not here. Well, it's not like Andrew to be late now, is it, Taplow?
No, Mrs. Crocker.
Well, excuse me, gentlemen. I think I'll just go and put these things upstairs.
Do you think she heard?
Heard what?
Me impersonating the...
Frank.
Oh, I've got your timetable here, Andrew.
Oh, excellent. Just what I wanted. Sorry I'm late, Taplow. I'll just put these down.
Frank, we see you too rarely.
Oh, Laura.
Andrew, you were late for Taplow.
I have apologized.
I do hope you're going to be joining us at the concert tomorrow evening.
Oh, yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Taplow, why don't you go and get the lemonade? You know where everything is.
Thank you, Mrs. Crocker Harris.
Mrs. Harris carries a couple of books over to where Mr. Hunter's standing.
Have you been?
Frank, would you like to see the timetable for next term?
Yes, I'd like that very much, Andrew.
Take that outside, Taplow. We'll have our class in the garden today. There you are.
You've really done a beautiful job, Andrew.
Oh, thank you. It has the merit of clarity, I think.
I don't know what we're going to do without you.
You'll find somebody else, I expect, or perhaps they'll buy a computer.
Say, what exactly is this new job of yours, Andrew?
Teaching English to foreigners. Andrew's doctor believes it'll be less of a strain than the lower fifth.
I'm really sorry, Andrew.
Well, there's nothing to be sorry about. I'm looking forward to the change.
Mrs. Harris gives Hunter a pointed look. He waves at her dismissively.
See you later.
So long, Andrew.
Taplow and Harris are sitting in the garden at a cast-iron picnic table under a tree.
Begin, Taplow.
Oh, Clytemnestra. We are surprised that...
We marvel at...
We marvel at thy tongue. How bold thou art, that thou can...
Canst is more poetic. Canst
utter such a boastful speech over the bloody corpse of the husband you've just so foully murdered.
Harris has been listening with his eyes closed. He opens them and puts on his glasses.
Taplow, I presume you're using a different text to mine.
No, sir.
That's strange. I see no foully murdered, no bloody corpse, simply Ep Andre, husband.
Yes, sir.
Why do you insist on inventing words that are simply not there?
Taplow appears to be considering his response.
Go on, Taplow. Oh, and I wish to understand.
I was thinking of it like this, sir. There she is, Clytemnestra. She really hates her husband, Agamemnon. He returns from winning the war. And what does she do? She welcomes him back and then murders him. She stabs him over and over and then makes a speech.
I'm delighted in your interest in the more lurid aspects of dramaturgy, Taplow, but I still fail to understand why you should wish to improve Aeschylus.
Today in class, sir, for the first time, I got a sense of the horror. It was so vivid. I mean, why can't we put more life into the translation, sir, like you did? Why can't we use words like bloody and corpse and murder?
Harris lifts a big glass jug and pours lemonade into two glasses.
When I was a very young man, not much older than you are now, I wrote, for my own pleasure, a translation of the Agamemnon, a very free translation, I remember, in rhyming couplets.
That must have been hard work.
Yes, it was. Very hard work. But I derived great pleasure from it, because the play had excited and moved me as it did you. And I wanted to communicate, however imperfectly, some of that emotion. A little like what happened in class today. My translation, I remember thinking, was very beautiful. Almost more beautiful than the original.
Was it ever published?
I'm sorry?
Was it ever published?
Oh, no, it was never published.
Harris is looking out across the lawn, lost in thought. Taplow puts down the little book and gulps down the glass of lemonade. He puts the glass back on the table and picks up the book again.
Shall I go on, sir?
Harris picks his watch up off the table.
No, I fear we've run out of time.
May I go now, sir?
Yes.
Taplow gets up from his seat.
Taplow. Scientia est celare scientiam. The art of learning is to conceal learning. And I wouldn't write at any of your friends. It isn't particularly funny.
Oh, I don't know, sir.
Taplow heads off across the grass. Harris watches him for a moment with a wistful smile. He has a drink from his glass of lemonade. A ride-on lawnmower is being driven along the immaculate grass at the front of the main school building. Some older pupils are carrying benches across the lawn too. Taplow and the younger schoolboys are in a washroom. Taplow's jigging about to the music. Dr. Rafferty hurries up a staircase, shaking his head.
Turn that ghastly noise down! Off!
Now, Buller? Where's Buller?
Buller has floppy blonde hair in a side parting. He approaches Rafferty.
Your mother's just telephoned. She's awfully sorry, but neither she nor your father are going to be able to get down here today. She wants you to take the train tomorrow, Shrewsbury. Then the chauffeur will meet you at the station. You all right, Buller?
Sir.
Good.
Buller is looking at the floor. Rafferty heads back down the stairs.
Keep them all in
time. I know it's hard, Buller, but you'll get used to it, believe me. Fuck off.
Harris is having breakfast outside.
Good morning.
Morning.
Sleep well?
Yes, fine, thanks. You?
Yes, fine, thank you.
Mrs. Harris drinks from a glass of orange juice. Her husband pours her a cup of tea.
Oh, there's a letter for you.
Mrs. Harris, who's a good deal younger than her husband, has delicate features and auburn hair, which is tied back in a bun. She's wearing glasses as she reads the letter. Mr. Harris continues with his crossword.
Is everything all right? Mother all right?
Yes. Fine. I forgot to cancel the papers. Do you need anything from the village?
No, thank you.
With a slight sideways glance, Mrs. Harris gets up from the table. Her husband takes off his glasses and watches her enter the house. He's about to say something, but seems to think better of it. Then Mrs. Harris, in a white blouse, pale blue jacket and beige trousers, is cycling down a country path. Taplow and his classmates are strolling through the town. Mrs. Harris has arrived in town too and slows the bike down to a stop outside a blue arched doorway, which she heads through. Taplow lingers by a row of books outside a second-hand bookshop. He picks out a book and opens it up. The door is ajar to a bright, modestly furnished flat. The furniture is simple dark wood, and the tabletop is cluttered with piles of books. Mrs. Harris enters with a wry smile and half shuts the door behind her. She checks her hair in the mirror. Mr. Hunter, in a grey T-shirt and jeans, enters the room, looking surprised to see her.
Laura.
Were you expecting someone else?
I thought we agreed that we wouldn't meet here.
Who are you expecting?
Gilbert, the new guy.
far. Come away from the window, please.
Mrs. Harris turns and, leaning on the window ledge, she watches Hunter approach.
Would you please come away from the window?
She gazes at him longingly. Hunter closes the blinds.
Aren't you going to say hello?
He leans in and gives her a little peck on the cheek. She shuts her eyes with her mouth open. She glances up at him, then strokes his chest and gives him several lingering kisses.
I love you, Kitty. It's a Puritan in you.
She kisses his neck and grabs his shoulders.
I'm fucking you.
She kisses along his jawline. Hunter starts to reciprocate the kisses and clasps her face in his hands. Then he turns his head away.
Kettle, it's just boiling.
There's more, apparently, than we can say for you.
I haven't got much time.
No, I don't think I have either.
He holds up a cup and a tea bag.
Tea?
Frank, you're more English than the English.
He moves out of the kitchen carrying two cups.
Listen, if Gilbert does come, let's just say you're here delivering a message from Andrew.
To hell with Gilbert. I've got good news.
Oh. What?
Don't worry, I'm not pregnant.
She sits on his bed.
I've had a letter from my mother. She's decided to visit my sister in Canada, so I can have her cottage in Dorset. Summer.
That's great.
Andrew starts a new job in September, but I don't have to go there immediately. That means you and I can be alone together. If you like. Just think, darling. Whole months. You will come, won't you? Frank. I need you. I need to be with you.
He takes her hands and slowly and carefully sits beside her on the edge of the bed.
You know, my father's not well. I may have to go back to the States.
She withdraws her hands, shuts her eyes, and her expression hardens. She flops backwards onto the bed and puts her hand to her forehead. Hunter stands up.
God, you remind me of him.
Of who?
Of whom? Of Andrew, of course. He didn't always used to be the old croc, you know. He wasn't much older than you are now when I first met him. He was so pure, so idealistic, but just as ungiving.
What happened to him?
I did.
You two ever happy together?
Can't remember. Can't remember.
Hunter glances round at her, then sits down on the edge of a coffee table and thinks.
Laura, I feel sorry for him.
No, you don't. You feel guilty because you're screwing his wife. To be more accurate, because his wife is screwing you. I think we should tell him.
Tell him what?
About us.
What, are you insane? It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I mean, what the hell would you want to tell him for, Laura? What are we talking about now? Marriage? Divorce?
I'm talking about us. I don't want us to become just good friends.
Listen, Laura.
Don't. Deja vu. I know exactly what you're going to say now. You're going to say you're not ready to settle down.
She opens the door and turns back to him.
Isn't that what you were going to say?
Hunter just looks at her without reply. Mrs. Harris pulls the door shut behind her. Taplow is still looking at books outside the bookshop. He picks out an old book and opens it up. It's the Agamemnon of Aeschylus, translated by Robert Browning. Mrs. Harris emerges out of the blue doorway with her bike. Taplow looks up from his book and sees her cycle away. Hunter opens the blinds at his window to watch her go. Taplow sees this too and retreats towards the shop front. Hunter moves away from the window. Taplow appears confused. The headmaster, wearing a grey suit, a bow tie and a Panama hat, heads towards Harris's thatched cottage. Inside, Harris is packing up books.
Anyone home?
Oh, yes, come in, headmaster.
Ah, Andrew. Can't stay long. Lovely day.
Beautiful, yes. Would you like to sit down?
Two things I wanted to discuss with you.
Tea or anything?
Oh, no, don't bother about tea. You have enough to do. Two most stressful things in life, moving and divorce. You know, it's extremely unlucky. Ill health should have forced your retirement.
Well, I felt that I could have continued, Headmaster. If you remember, it was yourself and the governess who thought that my health...
Well, quite so. I was going on to say that it's unlucky about your having to retire before becoming entitled to a pension.
You have decided not to award me a pension?
Not I. Lord Baxter and the governors thought long and hard about it. They were felt unable to make an exception.
But exceptions have been made in the past, have they not?
Ah, Richardson, you mean? Well, those were exceptional circumstances. After all, it was in playing football, staff against school, he received his injury.
I understand.
Second thing I wanted...
Mrs. Harris marches into the house.
Oh, headmaster.
I was just leaving.
Can I offer you a coffee, or it's too early for sherry, isn't it?
Oh, it's far too early. No, I'll leave you to it. You're very busy.
Oh, headmaster, I've completed the timetable. You'd like to take it with you?
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Andrew. Oh, what do you make of your successor, young Tom Gilbert?
He seems very agreeable.
Very agreeable. High academic honours at Oxford, Chancellor's Prize for Latin verse.
Oh, Andrew got that too. And a double first.
Of course you did. Sometimes it's hard to remember, you know, but you must be one of the most brilliant scholars ever to come to this school.
You're very kind.
Oh, when I say hard to remember, it's because you've done so many other good things, you know, timetable, your heroic battle for so long, the soul-destroying lower fifth.
I haven't found that my soul has been destroyed by the lower fifth, headmaster.
Oh, no, I was only joking.
What was the other matter you wished to discuss?
Oh, nothing at all, Andrew. No. I'm just saying, Laura, two most stressing things in life, moving house and divorce. Well, bad luck, Andrew, and I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye, sir.
The headmaster leaves. Mrs. Harris takes off her jacket. She watches her husband go back to his books. She moves to the kitchen and joylessly packs up the kitchen crockery.
Well, do we get it?
Do we get what?
The pension. Do we get the pension?
No.
What?
No.
Why not?
It's against the rules.
Well, Richardson got one. Why couldn't they give one to you?
It was special circumstances. He received his injuries playing soccer for the staff against the school.
His wife standing in the doorway.
And what did you say? Just stood there and made some joke in Latin, I suppose.
There was very little I could say in Latin or any other language.
Oh, I would have said something. Don't you worry, I would have...
I'm sure you would.
Jolly well.
She piles kitchen plates into a cardboard box, then marches out of the kitchen and stops at the foot of the stairs.
You know what you are, Andrew. You're a wimp. You always were and you always will be. A double first-class wimp. You know, I think I could have forgiven you anything if you'd have just once said no. Enough. Not just to me, but to every setback you've ever had.
Taplow and his classmates are in the showers. Trubshaw pushes back his long hair under the shower. Taplow stands next to him, looking worried.
You go to the croc sites for extra work, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes, Trubshaw.
Yes, Trubshaw.
Very good. So what's the gossip, then?
I don't know, Trubshaw.
Well, word is Mrs. Crocker-Harris is having it off with somebody. Is that right?
I really don't know, Trogshaw.
Oh, come on, Taplow. I've seen you. Nothing happens around here without you knowing about it. Who is she shagging? Who is it? Dr. Rafferty.
I've no idea, honestly.
Would you like to give her one? Have you ever seen her tits? I have. She was in the library once. She bent over. No bra, nothing. Gorgeous. I bet you'd like to put your face between them, wouldn't you, Taplow, you little wanker? The parents coming down today?
No.
No? Oh, why not? Oh, your mother's having it off with somebody as well. Word is, she's a good fuck, your mother. Is that right? Huh?
Taplow just stares resolutely forward, trying to contain his emotions. Trapshaw giggles. Then schoolgirls are disembarking from a coach, the porters standing beside it with a clipboard.
Mrs. Wilson, how are you?
I have a complaint.
Oh, dear.
10 spaghetti and 1 lettuce leaf is not enough for a growing boy. Ludwig tells me that's all he's had for dinner for the past week. We pay enough in fees. Please ensure that he's properly fed.
I'll speak to the kitchens about it. Do excuse me, won't you? I don't believe in stuffing the boys, you know, dear. Ah, King Abakendi. You know he owns most of Nigeria.
Really?
Oh, Your Majesty, how lovely to see you.
Dr. Frobisher.
You know my wife, Jane.
Of course.
Lord Baxter, head of Eurospace Industries, chairman of our governors, yes, and Lady Baxter.
delighted. Chap from Nigeria working for me, head of the design department. I'm sure you know him.
Oh, what is his name?
Lord Baxter looks blank.
Oh, he's doing very well, you know, he's doing very well, this boy. Marvellous job he's doing, yes. Now, Your Majesty, you know, Lord Baxter, I'd like to discuss our post-centric climate situation.
What a lovely hat.
Trubshaw, in a mauve cap and cricket whites, leads the fielding team onto the pitch. Fletcher and another young man are batting. They stride out and emerge at the front of the group, heading towards the wicket. The umpire puts the bails on top of the stumps. Harris enters his old classroom. Gilbert is sitting in his chair, looking into his desk. He stands up swiftly.
I'm sorry, sir.
Oh, no, it is I should apologise. After all, this is your room now, not mine. If you'll allow me to continue with the chore of packing.
I only came in here because this room is to become the centre of the new language block, and, well, I didn't expect anyone to be here.
Can't be very long, I promise you.
Please, don't hurry, sir. The fact is, this afternoon, I was feeling rather nervous. An attack of the jitters, and I thought that if I came in here and rehearsed taking a class or something, it might calm me. I expect you'd laugh at me for that.
Why would you expect that?
You keep such order. I saw that yesterday morning, and, well, after all, they call you the Hitler of the Lower Fifth.
Harris turns to him sharply with a frown.
That was clumsy of me, sir.
Harris turns back to the cupboard he'd been looking through. He tucks a flask under his arm and picks out another book.
I'm sure nothing's meant by it. It's just that you keep such wonderful discipline, that's all.
The Hitler of the Lower Fifth. Yeah, not bad boys. Sometimes a little wild and unfeeling, perhaps, but not bad. In the beginning, I tried very hard to communicate some of my own joy in the great literature of the past. I failed. As, of course, you will fail 999 times out of 1,000. But a single success can atone for all the failures in the world. And sometimes, very rarely, it's true, sometimes I had that success.
He moves away from a bookcase and puts more items in his bag.
The Hitler of the Lower Fifth.
I'm desperately sorry.
Don't apologize. I should have known for myself that I'm not only not liked, but positively disliked.
He puts the bag on his old seat and opens up the desk.
I realized many long years ago that the boys no longer laughed at me, but I don't know why they no longer found me funny.
Perhaps when you became ill.
No, I don't think so. I really don't know. In the early years, they used to laugh at me. At me, not with me. At my funny mannerisms and tricks of speech, which we all develop. The Hitler of the lower fifth. I would have thought that by now that epithet would have lost its significance. Apparently not.
He stuffs the last few books into the holdall and picks it up.
Undoubtedly. It will become my epitaph.
I'm sure they'll come up with something much worse for me.
Well, I bequeath you this room. I wish you a great success in it.
I'll do my best, sir.
Harris nods at him and moves towards the door.
And good luck to you in your future career.
My future career? Yes, thank you. The boys do still call me the Croc, though, don't they?
Gilbert just looks back at him without a response. Harris nods again and shuts the door behind him. Gilbert is left standing alone at the front of the classroom. Out on the cricket field, Trubshaw's about to bowl. He marches back to the start of his run-up, rubbing the ball on his trouser leg. Fletcher's standing at the crease with his bat poised. Trubshaw runs in and bowls, and Fletcher smacks the ball away on the leg side. He takes a run as the spectators on the boundary applaud.
And there's another 4 runs to Fletcher.
Ah, Laura! Andrew!
Master, Lord Baxter.
Lord Baxter and I would like to ask you, have a little chat with you, Andrew. Good time for a word?
The great thing about cricket is you can talk and watch at the same time. And
precisely, well put, Laura. A little favour I have to ask you, Andrew.
And what favour would that be, Headmaster?
It concerns tomorrow's prize-giving. I take it you're prepared to say a few words?
Yeah, well, I have made a few notes.
Oh, well hit! Well hit, Fletcher!
And there's another down.
Good, good, good. I know I can trust your discretion, not to mention your wit. And I'm sure you'll agree with me that we don't want these things to become too long and distressing.
Well, I have included a few puns and jokes in my speech.
That would be extremely acceptable. Oh, fine stroke, Fletcher.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's good. Just the thing.
I also want to touch on a matter of some gravity.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Now, the favour I want to ask you is this. You see, Fletcher is much, much junior to you, of course, and as such, his speech would come first and yours last.
Absolutely.
But you know how the boys feel about David. They adore him. They simply adore him. Now, there could well be a terrific display of emotion tomorrow, which would be difficult for me to cut short.
Fletcher's simply racing to his palate.
So, do you wish me to speak first?
I feel wretched about asking you this, Andrew. I really do. But, you know, things must come to a proper climax, and I'm sure you'd agree with me there. You understand, don't you, Laura?
Well, naturally, Headmaster, I would not wish to provide an anticlimax. I'll speak first.
Don't take it amiss, Andrew.
Yes. Nothing personal. Boys will be boys.
We need much rather applaud the sportsman than the scholar. It's only natural. It's quite impersonal, I promise you. Well, later, well played.
And the possibility of a century here for David Fletcher.
You? Ah!
Yes, I am.
Mr. Fletcher, batting superbly.
Oh, just fantastic. But I got to tell you, every time he hits the ball, I think he's going to drop the bat and run to first base.
Good heavens, he's 95. This could be his 100.
Trubshaw bowls again, and Fletcher swings his bat and clubs the ball away.
See, I think, everybody, for the rush.
The rest of the group wander off. Harris touches his hat politely. Mrs. Harris lingers.
Are you coming to tea?
I'd rather watch a little more cricket, if you don't mind. Frank, could you escort Laura to tea, please?
Sure.
Wearing a crumpled beige jacket, striped tie and Panama hat, and with his hands clasped together in front of him, Harris shuts his eyes briefly and lets out a heavy, tight-lipped sigh. He stares towards the cricket match gloomily, then walks away. Taplow's watching him from nearby. Fletcher plays another neat shot. Taplow heads past the scoreboard. He pauses as he finds Harris standing with his back to him, looking down the slope, at the bottom of which is an obstacle course. Taplow steps towards his teacher.
Sir? I'm sorry to disturb you, sir, but I did want to see.
Disturb me indeed. Well? Well, Taplow?
I thought this might interest you, sir.
He pulls a little book out of a paper bag.
First translation of the Agamemnon, sir.
Good heavens.
The Browning version.
Harris puts his glasses on and takes the book off the young boy.
I've glanced through it. I don't think it's much good, but...
I agree the translation has its faults, but I think you'll enjoy it more when you become more familiar with the meter that Robert Browning employs. Very interesting, Taplow.
He hands the book back with a polite smile and takes off his glasses.
It's for you, sir.
Me?
He shakes his head in confusion.
Yes, sir, I've written in it.
Still confused, Harris slowly puts his glasses back on and takes the book back. He opens it up and peers down at the front page. As he reads it, he presses his lips together thoughtfully.
Did you buy this?
Yes, sir, it's only second hand.
You shouldn't spend your pocket money in that way.
That's right, it wasn't very much.
Taplow frowns at his teacher.
The prices are still inside, is it?
No. Only what you wrote. Nothing else.
Harris just stares down at the page. Taplow continues to watch him and appears confused at the teacher's reaction.
What's the matter, sir? Have I got the accents wrong?
No. The Porus Parmenon is perfectly correct.
He squeezes his eyes shut and his head trembles as he starts to weep. Oh. Taplow continues to appear both surprised and confused. Holding his glasses case in his hand, Harris presses his fist against his mouth and tries to gather himself.
Forgive me, Taplow, I've been under rather a strain.
Yes, sir. I understand.
Harris shuts his eyes. He shakes his head slightly and fiddles with his glasses.
Well, goodbye, sir. And the best of luck.
Harris still has his eyes firmly closed. He nods a few times. Taplow moves away. Harris turns. He looks up for a moment, then bows his head, and giving in to his emotions, he sobs bitterly. He leans against a tree. The game of cricket continues. The umpire looks at his watch.
That's it!
He removes the bales. Three nuns are among the smiling spectators. Fletcher walks off the pitch with his bat raised. Harris has now wandered over to the scoreboard.
Mr. Crocker Harris? Excuse me, sir. Do you remember us, sir?
No, don't tell me. Wait a moment. Trimmer and your Newton.
Yes, sir. Well, we just saw you there, sir. Thought we'd say hello, sir.
And what have you two been up to?
I'm in banking, sir. Actually, I'm the managing director of National Western.
Oh, are you indeed?
And I'm in the army, sir. Communications.
Communications, eh? But not in classical Greek, I fancy.
Well, actually, sir, Newton's the youngest brigadier in the British Army.
Indeed. Congratulations. Stand easy, brigadier. Oh. Well, it's very nice to see you both.
Yes, sir. I see Fletcher got his 100, sir.
Oh, well, it's only to be expected. He's a superb player. And quite beautiful to watch, isn't he? Yes. Well, continued success to you.
Good luck, sir. Sorry you're leaving. Help me, I'm still terrified of the old bugger.
Me too.
Harris strolls through the tent where tea's being served. Still clutching the little green book, he takes off his hat and waves at the pianist in the band. He continues past tables lined with parents and schoolchildren, some in their cricket whites. Fletcher is sitting at the end of one table between Baxter and the headmaster.
Wonderful innings, Fletcher. Well played. Splendid.
He continues onwards, craning his neck slightly. He approaches a table where Professor Rafferty, Gilbert, Hunter, a young blonde woman, and Mrs. Harris are sitting.
Hotel corridor, absolutely naked and no key.
I wish I'd been there.
Andrew.
Have a seat.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Hello, Andrew.
You're looking pleased with yourself. What have you been up to?
It's not to ask, Laura.
Well, I'm looking pleased with reason. I think I've just been given a present.
Oh, by whom?
Taplow.
Taplow, that's fantastic.
Hey. So, what was the present?
It's a translation of the Agamemnon by Robert Browning.
Let me see. Oh, he's inscribed it.
What does it mean? Darling, what does it say?
It's all Greek to me. Mr. Gilbert, can you enlighten us, please? How marvellous. It's a hexameter. Theos, plethora,
yes, but what does it mean?
Well, I'm not familiar with the Browning version, but roughly it translates as God from afar looks graciously upon a gentle master.
Oh, how sweet.
Yeah. And very apt.
Can't imagine a boy giving me a present.
Nor me. A very wonderful thing to do, don't you think?
Yes, very much so, yeah.
He bought it with his own pocket money.
What was the inscription again? God from afar looks graciously upon a kind master.
Well, perhaps not kind master, but gentle master.
Yes, I agree with Mr. Gilbert. I think gentle is the better translation.
All right. Yeah. It's a lovely gift.
I would rather have this present than anything else I could think of.
Cunning little brat.
Why cunning, Laura?
Andrew, you don't have any wine. Can I give you some champagne?
Why cunning, Laura?
Because yesterday I saw Taplow doing an impersonation of you for Frank. Well, obviously, he was afraid that I would tell you and that you would put him on Cromwell's or stop his switch to Frank's form or some other Hitlerian torture. The book is clearly an insurance policy, a sweetener, a bribe.
I see.
Harris doesn't look at his wife. Mrs. Harris shakes her head with thinly veiled contempt. The rest of the group appear embarrassed and look down at the table. Mrs. Harris glances at her husband coldly. Harris gets up with a rather blank expression, and he walks back through the tent. Hunter turns to Mrs. Harris, sitting next to him.
Laura, go and tell him it was a lie.
Certainly not. It wasn't a lie.
Then I'll tell him.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
But Mr. Hunter has already marched off. Mrs. Harris stares down at the tablecloth.
I'd only hate you for your sympathy. Andrew doesn't need sympathy. It's his strength.
She takes a sip of champagne. Mr. Hunter jogs past the stone chapel wall. He stops and frowns to himself as he looks round. He enters the school library.
Andrew?
He moves past rows of bookcases, then stops at the end of one. Mr. Harris is sitting in a leather window seat. His head is turned and he's looking out of the window.
I want to make something clear about Taplow. He has a genuine affection for you. Andrew, please believe me. Well, I think you should treasure that book.
I'd rather like to be left alone at the moment, thank you.
You may find that it'll have a special meaning to you.
Oh, yes, it will mean something. It'll remind me of my own foolishness.
You don't deserve this. I mean, you've been treated badly, sir.
Harris frowns at him.
By the school, you mean?
Not just by the school.
Never, never presume to know the secrets of a marriage.
Take my advice, sir. Make a new start for yourself. You could still find someone who'll care for you, who'll be loyal, and who won't. Be faithful.
Still frowning, Harris stares at the young teacher and manages a slight nod of the head. He looks at the floor thoughtfully. He leans forwards on his seat now and continues to think. He appears to be lost for words as he digests what he's been told. He opens his mouth as if to speak, but nothing comes out.
We were incompatible from the moment we met. Although neither of us realized that at the time. Of course, Laura was only 22 years of age. We both required love, but of different kinds. Worlds apart. Worlds apart. So it's not really very tragic. Or abnormal. Just a problem of a dissatisfied wife and an inadequate husband. Often I believe a subject for farce.
A weary smile passes across his face as he glances at Hunter, who appears self-conscious.
Is there anything I can do to help you? I'd like to help you.
Yes, don't take sides. It's so very unbecoming.
Mr. Hunter nods slightly and moves away, leaving Harris to his deliberations. On the cricket field, Fletcher bowls, and his delivery splays the stumps. A boy at the scoreboard punches the air, and Fletcher's held aloft by his teammates. The schoolboys in their black jackets and red waistcoats rush onto the pitch. Mr. Harris emerges from the school building and makes his way through the spectators. He's staring at the ground as he passes the headmaster.
Do you see that, Andrew? 112 not out, Fletcher, and 7 for 23. Skidding out the school, skidding them out.
Harris continues onwards, still staring at the ground. Mrs. Harris is standing nearby as the crowds of spectators move past her. She's clutching the little green book and looking stony-faced. Mr. Harris catches sight of her and stops walking. He watches her for a moment. She notices him and looks at him without emotion, then with a tinge of regret, perhaps, as her expression softens. She makes her way across the lawn towards him. Later in their bedroom, Mr. Harris is sitting in front of a mirror at a dressing table. He's doing up a black bow tie. Mrs. Harris is by the wardrobe behind him. She's wearing a white petticoat and pulls on a bronze-coloured formal skirt over the top of it, then moves towards the dressing table. She zips up the skirt and reaches for a bottle of perfume, which she squirts on her wrist, then rubs some on the side of her neck. Neither of the couple look at each other. Mrs. Harris picks up a pearl necklace and glances at her husband. Harris stops fiddling with his bow tie and turns in his seat. She starts to tie it properly. Harris looks up at his wife with a serious expression.
Left Tupler's present behind. put in your study.
Thank you.
It wasn't a very good impersonation.
He takes her hands and she lets out a heavy sigh.
We inhabit different worlds, you and I. We always have. We always will.
What are you saying?
He looks up at her.
I'm saying no. I'm saying enough.
Mrs. Harris just stands over him with her mouth open. Her shoulders rise and fall as she breathes deeply. She withdraws her hands from his grasp.
Better not keep the headmaster waiting.
She marches back to the wardrobe and snatches at a garment hanging up on it. Mr. Harris quietly turns back to the mirror and checks his bow tie. He stands up and lifts his dinner jacket off the back of his seat. He puts it on and takes a few steps towards his wife, who's pulling on a white lace top. She's trying to retain her proud, aloof exterior as she glances at herself in the mirror. Harris does up the little clasp at the back of her top.
Do you still expect me to come to your prize giving?
I don't think either of us has the right any longer. Expect anything of the other.
Right. Well, I'll leave first thing tomorrow morning then.
As you wish.
She finishes getting dressed and Harris moves away. Nighttime. The choir boys are performing a concert in the school grounds. The audience is made up of teachers, governors and parents, all in smart evening dress. Mrs. Baxter turns to Mrs. Harris.
And does your new school provide splendid accommodation for the staff?
We haven't found anything that we like yet.
Bed somewhere. The two worst things in life are moving house and divorce. So, Laura, if I were you,
Oh, hello, darling. Well, I finished my round. Do you know, I often think being a headmaster is a bit like being a head waiter. Except head waiters have to know how to speak at least five languages.
This isn't the best moment, sir, but we're not staying the night, so, if ever you need any financial advice, assistance, indeed, anything of that sort, please, telephone. I'd like to help. Think of it as repayment.
Well, thank you very much. It's extremely civil of you.
Mr. Hunter, in jacket and black tie like all the other men, moves along the Harris's row carrying two bottles of champagne. Mrs. Harris watches as Hunter sits behind an attractive blonde lady and hands her one of the bottles. Mrs. Harris remains tight-lipped, but there appears a sadness behind her eyes. She composes herself and watches the choir. As she sits with her thoughts, fireworks are being launched behind her, whizzing up into the night sky. It's a tremendous display. Some shoot up in bright streaks, others explode into huge globes of coloured light. Through it all, Mrs. Harris stares at the ground gloomily. Later, Trubshaw drunkenly stumbles down a staircase accompanied by a couple of friends. As the two others head into their rooms, Trubshaw opens the door to his bedroom. Dressed in T-shirts, Taplow and his classmates are out of bed and leaving their dormitory. In his pin-up covered bedroom, Trubshaw pulls off his shirt, then his trousers. Taplow leads his friends down the corridor. The prefect manages to get his trousers off. He plonks himself into his bed in his boxer shorts and turns off the light. Taplow's class are pressed up against his door. As the young boys scamper off down the corridor, Trubshaw jumps out of bed and pulls back the covers. The foot end of his bed is covered in worms.
That's all right.
You all right?
Yeah.
Taplow's class, one after the other, rush back into the dormitory and leap back into their beds. One boy makes it just in time as Trubshaw pushes open the door and stands in the doorway.
You little fucking bastards.
He shuts the door. Taplow grins broadly. Harris is sitting on the edge of a single bed in a small, shadowy bedroom. He's looking at Taplow's book, which is lying on a table in front of him. He's still wearing his dinner suit. Mrs. Harris, wearing her white petticoat, opens a suitcase in her room. She moves over to the wardrobe and empties it of her dresses, putting them down on the bed. In the other room, Harris leans forward and carefully picks the little book up. He turns it in his hand and studies its spine. With his usual thoughtful expression, he opens the book and peers down at the cover page. He starts to read it, and a slight smile appears across his face. Outside the Harris's cottage, Foster opens up the back of the school transit van, then knocks on the door of the house. Harris, in suit and academic gown, is downstairs looking through his speech, pacing around amongst piles of boxes.
Hello? Anybody there?
Ah, Foster.
Sorry to disturb you, sir. I've come to pick up Mrs. Crocker Harris.
Oh, yes, yes, she's upstairs. Laura, Mr. Foster's here.
I'm coming.
The two men give each other polite, if brief, smiles.
Glorious day.
Indeed, sir. Glorious.
Harris glances down at his notes, but Foster persists.
Sorry to hear about your mother-in-law, sir.
Ah, yes, yes.
Must be a disappointment, sir. Your wife not being there for your farewell speech. And, well, if I may be so bold, sir...
Well, what is it, Foster?
But I'd just like to say, the old place won't be the same without you, sir.
Oh, thank you, Foster. It's very kind of you.
Mrs. Harris comes down the stairs in a polka dot dress.
Hello, Foster. Would you mind, there's a couple of suitcases upstairs.
Harris looks at his wife pensively. She glances at him but is unable to hold his gaze and turns away. She looks back at him again, as if unsure of what to say. Foster heads down the stairs carrying suitcases.
Thank you. I think this is just two more.
Her polite smile drops again as the porter leaves and she resumes her awkward glances. Harris's expression is rather somber and careworn. He blinks a couple of times and steps slowly towards his wife.
Well, I mustn't be late for the prize giving.
No.
Yes.
She looks at the floor. She looks to the side, then attempts a faint smile as she looks at him. She sighs deeply as she searches for the words. Her eyes fill up. The porter comes back in. She smiles politely again as he heads upstairs. The husband and wife just stand and stare at each other.
Goodbye.
He turns and leaves the cottage. She watches him go, looking rather dazed. In a school quadrangle, Harris moves through a crowd of teachers and academics wearing black robes.
Ah, oh, Andrew, there you are. Right, follow me, everyone.
Headmaster, I must tell you I've changed my mind. I wish to speak second, as is my right.
What about Mr. Fletcher?
Mr. Fletcher will have to speak first.
But you promised yesterday.
Yes, but I now see the matter in an entirely different light, and today is today.
We're ready for now.
Just a second, please, Trubshaw. Look, if you speak second,
it'll be the most dreadful anticlimax.
Be that as it may, as senior master, it is my privilege to so do.
We agreed yesterday.
All right, follow me, everyone.
The headmaster leads the others into the school hall. Harris lingers and pops a pill into his mouth.
Ryan. Thompson Prize for Excellence, S. Trubshaw.
Wilson Cap for Biology, E.R. Morris.
Harris is sitting in a row of teachers on the stage with his fist pressed against his mouth. Mrs. Harris is standing in the garden in the front of her cottage, looking at the church ahead of her. She then looks round sadly as the porter shuts the doors of the school van. She lets out a deep sigh and steps towards it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my painful duty to listen with you to a few sad words from two masters who are leaving us. First, I shall call upon...
He turns. Fletcher looks at Harris with a sympathetic smile.
First, let us call upon Mr. David Fletcher!
Fletcher frowns slightly and looks at Frobisher in shock. He looks back at Harris, who's stony-faced. The headmaster goes back to his seat and sits down. Fletcher moves to the steps at the front of the stage and holds up his hand. He fiddles with the brass buttons on his jacket.
Well, chaps, I'm not much good. You know, on my feet. Except when I'm running between the wickets. So I'll just say, I'm really sad, you know, to be leaving this wonderful old place. I've loved it here. So, you know, good luck and goodbye.
He steps backwards towards his seat. He nods and says thank you as he sits. The headmaster gets up again with a smile.
And now, three cheers for David Fletcher. Hip hip! And now, Mr. Andrew Crocker Harris.
Harris is staring forwards as if lost in thought. He gets up and, putting his glasses on, he moves to the front of the stage. He takes his notes from his jacket pocket and bows slightly at the headmaster. He turns and faces the hall with the same dour expression.
Study of the classics, in my view, is the foundation of our culture. And culture is simply an expression of what is best in society. Philosophy, decent government, justice, art, language. Our classical heritage is no longer valued. And how can we help meld civilized human beings if we know?
He peers down at his notes, his lips pressed tightly together. He shuts his eyes. Mrs. Harris has joined a crowd standing at the back of the hall. The boys all watch with blank expressions. Taplow looks a little confused.
If we no longer believe in civilization.
A new thought seems to strike him. He frowns to himself and starts to shuffle through his notes. He takes off his glasses. Slowly and deliberately, he moves down the steps at the front of the stage and along the aisle running down the middle of the hall. The children watch him as he passes them with his head bowed. Then he stops halfway along the aisle.
I am sorry. I'm sorry because I have deserved the epithet Hitler of the Low Fifth. I'm sorry because I have failed to give you what it is your right to demand of me as your teacher. Sympathy, encouragement, humanity. I have degraded the noblest calling a man can follow, the care and moulding of the young. When I came to this school, I still believed that I had a vocation for teaching.
I knew what I wanted to do. And yet I did not do it. I can offer no excuses. I have failed and miserably failed. And I can only hope that you can find it in your hearts, you and the countless others who have gone before you, to forgive me for having let you down.
A tear runs down Mrs. Harris's face as she watches her husband. Harris gives a resigned little smile.
I shan't find it easy to forgive myself. That is all.
He puts his glasses into his top pocket and resumes his somber march. He stops. His eyes are closed and his head bowed. Then he watches as the boys rise to their feet and applaud him. The parents in the gallery above them stand too. Harris nods to himself a sad little nod and looks up, clearly overwhelmed. Taplow and his classmates are grinning broadly. The headmaster looks a little shocked, but is clapping along. Harris's bottom lip quivers with emotion. He rubs the sides of his mouth and remains in the middle of the hall as the applause echoes around him. He steps through a stone archway and heads outside. The school chaplain, a bushy-haired fellow, puts out his hand and Harris shakes it a little self-consciously. He nods and moves through a group of his peers, who are all applauding him. Dr. Rafferty shakes his hand. He gets a kiss from a female staff member, then he stops and puts out his hand and Hunter shakes it. Then Taplow and his friends are standing in a group nearby.
Sir.
Taplow, boys.
Goodbye, sir.
Taplow offers his hand and Harris shakes it.
Goodbye, Taplow. Gentlemen. Goodbye.
The group of boys head up some steps.
Taplow, ave atque vale memo esto sodalicii nostri. Well, it means if you have any regard for me next term, you will kindly refrain from blowing yourself up when you switch to science.
Thank you, sir. Yes. Well done,
sir. Standing with his hands behind his back, Harris watches the schoolboys head off towards the school building. He turns slowly and lets out a sigh. Mrs. Harris is standing at the end of a passageway in front of him. She smiles thinly. Harris walks towards her with a quizzical expression. She manages a weary little shrug. Then she grasps his shoulders and kisses him firmly on the cheek. Harris frowns at her. She holds his hands and seems to be searching for the right words. Harris glances at the porter who's leaning against the school van nearby, tapping his watch. Harris gives him a slight nod.
You'll miss a train.
She turns to the van, then looks back at her husband. She moves towards the van. Harris watches her go, his face locked in a thoughtful frown. From inside the van, Mrs. Harris glances at her husband as if she has more to say, and sighs. Harris nods gently at her. She raises her hand and mouths bye at him, and the van moves off. Harris watches it go. The van heads out along the driveway at the edge of the immaculate school lawns. Harris looks up at the sky and thinks to himself. With rolling hills behind it on the horizon, the van disappears down into a dip in the road. As teachers and pupils move past him, Harris slowly and carefully takes off his school robes. The end.